The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Appreciate you listening. 12 after 7, Mr. Outdoors is standing by. We'll talk with him in about two. Michael Shaw, you wanted to weigh in. You wanted to weigh in on what Rick was talking about, in which bad bills turning into less bad bills. Go ahead. Get your take on that.
Well, you know, listening to you and Rick talk, we can hear the frustration in both of your voices. So I'm going to start once again shouting something that I've been pushing for quite a while. This bill that you guys have been talking about that Mike Johnson had to put through is exactly why we need a single topic law. A bill should only be about one item. You want to fund Israel, you put a bill forward.
Right.
You want to fund Ukraine, you put a bill forward. You put want to do border funding, you do a bill forward. These multifaceted bills, they create bad bills because there's so much junk piled in there. And the only way to stop the junk is to do a single bill law.
Agreed. In other words, you're thinking that Congress, and I would even say the state legislature then, should operate on this under the same rule that ballot measures that citizens bring forward have. It's one topic, one subject, that's it, right?
That's it.
All right.
The only way you're going to clean up the swamp.
All right. Good job. Hey, thanks for the call, Michael. Good one. Good. Have a good weekend, okay? Mr. Outdoors, we'll talk with him next. Plenty going on.
This hour of the Bill Myers Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros and Full Service Auto Repair.
One of each, Forte VIN 770-783, MSRP 21645, 3500 due, Sol VIN 235213, MSRP 22210, 3500 due, 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer, plus tax, title, license, 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance ends 4/30/24.
Making payments on a car you don't want to drive anymore? You need Kia Medford's Payment Wipeout. We're wiping out all the payments you have left on your old car so you can drive a new Kia, like a new 2024 Kia Forte LXS or a new 2024 Kia Soul LX. Just $149 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Get into a new Kia, like Fortes or Souls. Your choice, just $149 a month during the payment wipeout at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
Two Dogs Fabricating knows trailers. They sell trailers and repair trailers. So if you'd like your trailer inspected, bring it to the dogs and they'll sniff it out. Two Dogs will check the axles, hitch, tongue, lights, bed, brakes, and more to make sure your trailer's roadworthy. Most trailers on the road are fine, but it's good to have it checked out once a year. They'll scrutinize crucial welds for corrosion and cracks, too. And if you need any repairs, you'll get a quick, reasonable estimate. Two Dogs Fabricating on Bryan Way, off Sage in Medford.
Every session in Salem creates new bureaucracy, new agencies, and more state employees, all paid for by Oregon's taxpayers.
The continuous bureaucratic expansion is as bad as the egregious bills we all hear about. As your senator, I will be a no vote on all bad legislation.
Conservative, principled, independent. Vote Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. Paid for by Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. ID 23412.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD. And this is the Bill Myers Show.
Greg Roberts, Mr. Outdoors, puts on his little super cape every Friday and tells you, yeah, Mr. Outdoors, M.O., there it is there. And every Friday we talk about the Outdoor Report. Outdoor Report sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford. 16 after 7. So, Greg, going to be kind of, just kind of showery, wet, cloudy, you know, a bit of a weekend. It's going to get a little drier, though, right? And then is this spring forecast going to be pretty much the way we're looking at here the next week or two? What do you say? Looking forward.
Yeah, in fact, you know, it depends on where you are as to when the drying begins. If you're in the immediate valley floor area of Medford, we are probably going to start drying out from this point. If you're Grants Pass, outlying areas of Jackson County, south end of the county, Ashland, the drying will start later today. Tomorrow, the way it's looking right now, and I just looked at this, the highest chances for areas to have showers are going to be over in near mountainous terrain, because terrain lift tomorrow is going to be pretty critical as to where the shower development is going to occur. And then as we go through the day on Saturday, as you know, the moisture source moves away, the instability moves away, we will see drying even over the mountains starting to kick in later in the day. And you know, so you get a situation that the valley floors will be dry tomorrow but cloudy, and the rain that falls will be, you know, pretty much located over terrain. Then come Sunday, well, then you've got a situation where all areas should be dry. So not a total rain out either by any stretch.
Okay.
And yesterday at this time, it looked like we would have a pretty good chance for thunderstorms here in the area today, especially, you know, Cascade, Siskiyou's, elevated terrain. That looks far less likely right now. That looks to be more east of the Cascades, Klamath, Lake counties for today. So, you know, yeah, we're seeing some improvement here. And then we're going to have, you know, a fairly dry week next week until we get to Thursday. And Thursday is where all the data is pointing to a chance for rain coming back in, cooler temps, because temps will bump up into the 70s, you know, middle part of next week. But trying to get the timing on when that next round of rain and cooling will arrive, you know, we're still, you know, working at that because that's a ways out. But unfortunately, it looks like, you know, we're going to have another weekend where there's probably going to be a pretty good chance for rain, at least in the form of showers, and cooler than average temps.
All right. Very good. Appreciate the outlook here then, Greg. Hey, let's shift into something that you wanted to make sure and that we didn't get to last week, but it had to do with the status of wolves in Oregon, and and more importantly, the number that was reported here. What's that story?
Yeah. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife released their survey, which they do at this time every year, you know, basically beginning of April, and they give what the number of wolves that they have been able to confirm being present is. This is not what they're saying, the absolute, this is how many wolves are in the state. That's not what they are saying, although that's what you're going to hear the animal rights groups and other groups say they're doing. What they're saying there's 178 wolves in Oregon that they can confirm their presence. Obviously, there are likely many more that they have not been able to confirm their presence. And when they say they can confirm their presence, what that means is most of the time they've gone out, they've placed trail cams, they've caught them on the trail cams, they've caught images, they've found tracks, they found solid proof that, you know, wolves are there. So the interesting part of that, though, is that 178 number did not change from the last time they released the number of wolves they could confirm in Oregon. And my message box blew up. People were like, how can that possibly be? Well, you know, it's pretty easy to explain. When we have had more wolves killed in Oregon, either legally or illegally, than we have seen since they were officially declared to be here. And then the other thing people are overlooking, we sent 10 wolves to Colorado to go be a problem there that had been a problem here in Oregon. So when you take 10 wolves out of the equation immediately, when you take another 16 out of the equation, when you have the packs that average survival rate for pups is 50%, yeah, I definitely can believe with all the other factors with kill or transport to Colorado, I can definitely believe we're still holding at 178.
All right, so you see no problem with that statistic then. You see no problem with it, unlike their critics, though, that are not believing that.
Well, okay. Right, because, you know, the critics just look at it, and what they think is, well, the wolves are out there having pups, true, and the wolves are, you know, so they don't understand how that number could possibly hold, and yet I do. you know, because I look at all the other factors going on and see the morbidity, and I also see, you know, the transfer rate out of here. So, yeah, I could buy this. I don't think there's anything suspicious about that at all.
Greg, I was talking with some people, and by the way, I think you may have a call, and we'll see if somebody has a question for you about this or a comment. But I was talking with someone who had some inside knowledge about this, and the cougar killing in Ashland earlier this week. Remember, there was a cat.
Oh yeah,
cat attacked a cat. You know, the big cat attacked a little cat, and and so Ashland police ended up having to dispatch that. And this is what I heard. You know, about this is that the woman who had the cat attacked was then complaining that she didn't want the cat shot, but I didn't want it killed. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, is this attitude about a cougar hanging out in the tree right on your property, is this a common thing here in Southern Oregon, you know, to have people?
Well,
I mean, what do you do?
Let's put it another way. There are clearly people in this town who have bought the Bolstein being peddled by the media and Hamas, because we've got spray-painted graffiti all over town.
Yeah.
Stop bombing children. Stop genocide.
Yeah.
So you have this mindset that says, oh, well, yeah, we want Israel to deal with Hamas, but you can't do it this way and you can't do it that way. Here's a perfect way to understand that mindset.
All right, so you have the cat sitting in the tree there right by the cops, right?
Yep.
You know? Okay, yeah. And then, well, I don't want, what are you supposed to do, get out a little cat trap, yeah, or have a little snare? And
yeah, and you can't, and I've talked about this before, I'm going to say it again, it is impossible to tranquilize a mountain lion and move it up into the hills and release it to go have the peaceful Disney-fueled life that, you know, people who really don't know a thing seem to think they're going to have. Mm. We've talked about this. You cannot do that with cats, because as soon as you do that, the cat that you tranquilize in town and take up in the hills, its lifespan is probably going to be less than 24 hours, because the resident male is going to find it and kill it.
Hmm, interesting.
The cat's dead one way or the other.
Yeah, and the big challenge here, from what I understand, is that the for these mountain lions, these cougars, that the territory is absolutely massive, isn't it? Like 100 square miles, that sort of thing, 10 by 10?
Yeah, we talked right about that. For the males, yes.
Yeah.
Females will be smaller. Typically, in an average male's territory, he's going to have 4 to 6 females within that are basically his, you know, breeding females.
Okay. All right. Well, I just thought I'd ask you, because I heard about this, and, you know, well, I didn't want it shot. It's like, you don't understand. You know, there's just, I can't believe that people could even still think this way, because that cat, you know, given the right situation, would chew your head off. You know, I don't get that thought process.
And the fact that it went after a pet, that tells me it's probably more likely either a young one, which I suspect that it is, or an older one, a much older one that got forced out of its territory.
Yeah.
Because that happens too.
All right. Mr. Outdoors here.
Territory, and the loser has to move on or die.
All right. Mr. Outdoors with me. Let me go to line one. You're on with Greg. Hi, who's this? Question, comment? Go ahead. Hello? Hey, you're on. Go ahead. Okay. I don't get these people that you hang on, then I put you on, then you hang up. Hi, who's this? Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. It's Gary.
Hey, Gary.
About 6 months ago on 199 coming down Hayes Hill, I saw what looked to be a wolf eating garbage somebody had dumped on the side of the road. What, did I see a wolf coming down Hayes Hill?
I would actually say probably more likely a hybrid, especially out in that area. You get out in the rural areas of our counties here, and you know how people like to have pit bulls as macho pets? Well, there's the other side of people that will enjoy having hybrids as macho pets. And unfortunately, even though there are rules about what they're supposed to be doing with their hybrids, very, very few hybrid owners actually truly follow that. Most of them are going to let them get out and run around, and I am suspecting it is far more likely, especially right along the highway, that you saw a hybrid, because hybrids just inherently have a much lower fear of people. In fact, most of the time they have zero fear of people. A true wolf standing right next to the highway in the daylight eating garbage, I would have a very difficult time believing that one would do that unless, you know, it was absolutely starving.
All right, so very good.
I'm going to lean hybrid here.
Very good. Hey, Gary, thanks for the call. Really appreciate that. Greg, appreciate the report. We'll talk to you next Friday. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the little bit of shower activity when we get it, and we'll see you soon. We'll catch up on RogueWeather.com. Thanks so much. Okay?
You got it, Bill.
Outdoor Report, sponsored by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority on Airway Drive in Medford, 728. We're going to talk with Patrick Green. He's running for district attorney here in the next few minutes. And given that we had the Asante case broken wide open, as MPD, Medford Police, ended up handing it over to the district attorney's office, that's certainly top of the fold, along with other issues. We'll kick it all around.
Integrity, service before self, and excellence in all we do. Those are the core values the Air Force has taught me, and I live my life every day using those values in serving my community, in volunteer work, at my business, family, and if elected, serving you in Josephine County. Hi, my name is Chris Barnett, candidate for county commissioner. I work and play here. I'm a graduate of Hidden Valley, a still-serving serviceman, business owner, and a hardworking taxpayer like you. If elected in May, I want to serve you, the citizens of Josephine County, and be your voice. I believe in the grassroots of our communities, and that means building relationships between the county and the cities, having a positive image of our taxpayer dollars at work, and have unity in our communities to build a safe Josephine County. Do you want what's best for Josephine County and keep us moving in the right direction? I sure do, and that's why I'm asking for your vote in May for county commissioner. I want to put my leadership, business skills, positivity, and energy working for you. Please vote Chris Barnett for county commissioner so I can get to work for a better Josephine County.
Paid for by citizens to elect Chris Barnett for commissioner.
Life's busy and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10. The Rogue Gardener, sponsored by Grange Co-op.
Gardeners start seeds indoors so that they can get a jump on the growing season. The farther north you go and where there are still gardeners, the more you're going to see people starting seeds indoors to take advantage of the benefits of the warmth, and that we can then extend the growing season by weeks and even by a month or two.
Talk to Stan Saturdays 10 to noon, Sunday morning encore at 9 on KMED and KCMD.
The Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KCMD.
Okay, I'm already talking with Patrick Green behind the scenes here. He's running for district attorney, so we're going to catch up on the rest of the news, and then we'll kick around some of those issues that we were talking about, and I'll get the camera on him so you can see him, you'll hear him. No, you can't taste or smell. We don't do that. None of that going on here yet. All coming up on KMED and KCMD.
The soil around your home is a lot like a sponge. It expands when it's wet and contracts when it's dry. Over time, all that movement can damage your foundation. Your house starts sending warning signs like cracks, uneven floors, and sticking doors and windows. Terra Firma can stop the cycle. Our experts will find the source of the problem and provide permanent solutions to make your foundation safe and solid again. So if you suspect your foundation has issues, don't wait for things to get worse. Call Terra Firma today for a free evaluation.
Hello, Rogue Valley. Spring is here, and with it, Knox Classical Academy's annual spring banquet. Join us on May the 4th for a Saturday evening full of wonderful food and music, an evening dedicated to the important cause of making classical Christian education available to Jackson County's youth. Come kick up your heels with us at Jacksonville's Bingham Knoll and celebrate another year of excellence at Knox Classical Academy. Get your tickets and learn more at knoxmedford.com. That's knoxmedford.com.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MilletConstruction.com.
Good morning. I'm Marcus Villa with your NBC5 Morning News Update. The police investigation into the alleged theft and misuse of controlled substances by a former Asante nurse is complete. The Jackson County DA's office says it has received the results of the police investigation but has not said whether charges will be filed. The DA's office says the investigation began in December and resulted in serious infections in numerous patients. The DA's office did not provide a timeline on when a decision will come regarding whether charges will be filed in its press release. Eagle Point High School had an open house for its new K-Bar Agricultural Learning Center last night. The event featured a jackpot stock show, a variety of interactive science activities, and a special donor recognition. According to the school district, the project received its biggest donation of $1 million from the Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe of Indians. That's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Marcus Veal. Have a safe and great weekend.
This hour of The Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, it's Jason at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Through April, purchase a set of four Cooper tires for practically whatever you drive, and you'll get a Visa reward card in the mail. Get $100 on top of the line Cooper Discover STT Pro Mud Terrains or Cobra Instincts for your sports car. Get $75 on five styles of all-terrain truck tires, including the popular AT3 XLT, and get $50 on three styles of all-season passenger tires, including Endeavor. Save on Cooper tires at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
Who'll Stop the Rain is a classic 1970 hit from Creedence Clearwater that reached number two on the U.S. Billboard Pop Singles chart. While Millette Construction doesn't know the answer to John Fogerty's question, they do know how to fix your home's foundation if moisture is making it unstable. So don't worry about clouds of mystery pouring confusion on the ground. Millette will fix your foundation, level your house, and solve the water problem that's causing the damage. Get on solid ground. Visit MilletteConstruction.com for a free consultation.
Freedom, prosperity, safety. These are some of the values that made Oregon great. Dr. Noah Robinson will work to preserve our treasured Oregon values.
As your state senator, I'll stand up to the Democrats and lobbyists in Salem, continuing the fight for your parental rights, promoting limited government, and protecting unborn lives.
Conservative, principled, independent. Vote Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. Paid for by Noah Robinson for Oregon Senate. ID 23412.
This is Bill Meyer. Josephine County Republicans sponsoring an all-day Patriots Conference tomorrow at the Joe County Fairgrounds from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. There'll be local leaders, endorsed candidates, 21 outstanding speakers. Buy your tickets now at the Republican headquarters across from the courthouse in Grants Pass or online at jocogop.org. To find out more about tomorrow's all-day Patriots Conference, including a schedule of speakers, drop by the headquarters or go to jocogop.org. Again, that's jocogop.org.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
735, appreciate you waiting here and listening and waking up and getting informed about this. And one of the things, as I've always expressed, my most favorite people to talk to are those running for judges and district attorneys, because you can just ask them anything and they get, no, not really. But enough about my frustration. But I still think it is so important. We haven't talked much about the Jackson County District Attorney race. It is an open race. And Patrick Green is joining me in studio. Patrick, you are Deputy District Attorney.
Right? I'm the Chief Deputy District Attorney.
Chief Deputy.
Second in command. So that means that I help run the office. I help manage the office. And when the district attorney, the elected district attorney, is unavailable or out of town, I am the acting DA.
Okay, great. And there's been a lot going on there this week. It is so bizarre. I knew you were coming on Friday, and then yesterday out comes this big press release about the Asante case, Medford police having handed over the investigation to the district attorney's office. And you're the one that's going to be heading this, from the sounds of it?
Yes, I'm going to be the lead prosecutor. I'm going to remain the lead prosecutor all the way through the conclusion of the case. I'd reiterate what was in the press release. If charges are filed, I'm going to assign two other senior, very experienced prosecutors to join me and assist me in that prosecution as co-counsels.
Yeah, I would imagine this is going to be a big one. I'm just asking for an educated guess on something like this. About how long do you think it will take for the office to decide whether or not they will prosecute or not? I know you can't hold anything, but what is your educated guess on something like that?
You know, I want to make a decision quickly on it because since the beginning of learning about the case, you know, I was initially briefed at the same time as law enforcement was back in December. And so I want to move quickly on it. And I think the community should expect that as well. So I want to live up to that expectation and make a quick decision. And not to say that it won't be a well-considered decision, but I want to make sure that I work through it as quickly as I can to make that decision.
I had a number of listeners that were writing me and saying, well, why is there even a question about prosecution? What kind of decisions go into whether you will actually take a case and indict and do all that?
Yeah, you know, certainly I've been kept up to date as the investigations unfolded over these last few months. But I do not know all the intimate details myself because I haven't been sitting in the witness interviews. I haven't looked at the thousands and thousands of pages of documents that are part of this case yet.
So we are talking thousands.
We are talking tens of thousands of documents, including medical records, and then dozens of witness interviews. The scale of this case is the equivalent to some of the most complicated homicides. You know, I think this will go down as the largest case that our office has ever handled.
Is this one of those situations here, Patrick, that, you know, we regular folks who are not involved in the law and or law enforcement, it's like we kind of know in our gut what's going on here, but what we know in our gut is not what you can bring to a court of law.
Yeah, you know, I as a prosecutor, I have to make sure that all my I's are dotted and my T's are crossed, right? And that's what people should expect. That's certainly what a jury expects when get in front of them. So,
yeah.
And my obligation as a prosecutor is to make sure when I decide to charge someone with a crime, that I'm confident that I can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And so,
you try not to charge. Crimes just because, hey, the people are, you know, baying for blood, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I have an ethical duty, as a prosecutor to make sure that I can prove it at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that depends on what the evidence is, whether it's circumstantial evidence, direct evidence, what the witnesses, said, what the records show.
Kind of along the lines of, you know, the nurse was on duty at this point and something bad happened to someone, right?
Right.
Correlation is not necessarily causation, those kind of things. You have to be able to, you know, take it to the jury.
I have to assess the strength of the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the public should expect that I make a well-considered decision and not rush to judgment.
All right. Well, you know, that's all part of it.
Yeah.
All right. So you can't give any details about the case. We know that. I understand it. You can't poison the jury pool, too.
I think
that would also be a very and having been on a jury, it's like, you know, if everybody already knows it's been pre-tried.
Right.
That makes it pretty tough. All right. Well, we'll stay in touch with you, sir. So you're going to be the lead on this one. All right. I didn't even get a chance to ask you about family and such. I know you graduated from Lewis and Clark Law. And when did you graduate from Lewis and Clark?
2015.
Okay. All right. You've been in the office in here since 2016.
Yes.
And now you are, you know, the main guy. What was it again? Your title?
Chief Deputy District Attorney.
Chief Deputy. So you were like one step below the DA then.
Yes.
Why do you want to get to the top dog? I think it may be a self-evident question, but...
Yeah, you know, for me, it's really the reason I became a prosecutor and why I remained a prosecutor is that I always had this drive growing up that I wanted to make my career matter. I wanted to make a positive difference in a community. And so that's why I became a prosecutor. And really, the reason I decided to run was I think it's important that the DA is somebody who's dedicated and committed to being a prosecutor in the long term, because none of the problems we face are going to be solved overnight. We need somebody that's going to be there through the tough times and is going to be committed in the long term to solving those challenges.
What is the major difference, if you were to find any, between you and your opponent in this DA race, Patrick Green?
Well, the biggest difference is my opponent's never prosecuted a case in Oregon. She hasn't prosecuted a case in more than 20 years. you know, I have the on-the-job experience that will allow me on day one, the second I take the oath as just district attorney, to hit the ground running. There's going to be no learning curve there for me. And additionally, on that point, you know, I'm already managing the staff and my fellow prosecutors in the office. I know how to lead them. I know them as
a known quantity.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And they know me. So I'm a known quantity to them too. And so I also have that trust and respect the second I take the oath as well.
Okay. I wanted to touch in on something that has been of concern. And to what extent has Oregon been influenced by the, well, there's been the George Soros funded getting woke district attorneys hired in many different jurisdictions. Of course, we think about San Francisco, Los Angeles, and various other places. And I just have to ask you, are you involved with any of that, with any of that thing, of that kind of agenda at all?
No, I'm not. So I've only ever been a prosecutor. I've only ever thought about being a prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, since early on at starting the job, I wanted to remain at the district attorney's office for the rest of my career.
Well, I would ask anybody running for DA, are you a, you know, kind of a defund the police where that enforcing the law is racism?
No.
That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah,
here, Patrick,
no,
okay?
Certainly. No, and I appreciate that question. Certainly not. So my fiance is a Medford police officer. So I support our law enforcement. I know how hard their job is. So I also hear from her just her experience on the front lines and her frustration.
Are you detecting this agenda rising in Southern Oregon systems, though? I'm just kind of curious how I think it's naive to think that Southern Oregon will be ignored in such big, well-funded, not-so-secret agendas of pushing certain prosecutors in place.
Yeah, and I don't know how much Southern Oregon's being affected by that. I know Oregon as a whole. You look at what happened up in Multnomah back in 2020.
Oh yeah, look at Mike Schmidt. Yeah,
and he doesn't have a past as a defense attorney, but certainly a defense minded individual that came into office there was elected, and we've seen how that's gone, and that is my worry, and that's what was my original motivation before I even knew who my opponent was going to be, was to keep that from happening, because we've seen how that's gone up there. And then, like you mentioned, in San Francisco, which was also a disaster.
Patrick Green is running for district attorney. And the website, by the way, I had it up here. Let me just pull that up. And that is Patrick Green, the number 4DA.com, if you wanted to find out more about this. Any particular cases that you tried that you can speak about now, because they're over now, that you were particularly proud of, and why?
Yeah, you know, I think the case I'm most proud of is I tried in April of 22 a co-defendant murder case that I went out to the original scene when it happened. It happened in January of 2020, so it took 2 years to prosecute that case. But it started out as a genuine whodunit, and it was a murder that happened out in Butte Falls, and it was somebody discovered the body at the side of the road right in the morning as they were heading to work, and so we showed up there, and it was a case that we had to build from scratch to find out who did it and track them down and get them into custody and make sure that we had enough evidence to convict those two individuals. And we did. It was a long trial. It was a 10-day trial.
Boy, that is a long criminal trial.
So it was a grind. But I am most proud of my work on that case and ensuring justice. And those two dangerous individuals now are serving 25 years to life.
What is probably the most misunderstood aspect of being a prosecutor and largely even higher up the food chain, being a district attorney to most people who are not in the law or law enforcement?
You know, I think a lot of people, unfortunately, the criticism of prosecutors is that we are counting convictions or we're counting how much prison time we get. And that is not the case. A prosecutor's job is to do the right thing for the right reasons, and to ensure justice. And that's the way that I've always come up as a prosecutor, is that, at the end of the day, I need to make sure that, I'm doing the right thing. And so I think that's the highest duty of a prosecutor. I think that's one of the misconceptions in the narrative. And sometimes it's in the national media that prosecutors are evil, or that we have bad intentions. And certainly, I think in any profession there are bad apples, but I think prosecutors by and large are really good people good things, and just trying to get to the right result.
Now, you would be being, top prosecutor if you were elected district attorney. Is there anything you can do to help clear up some of the challenges that the system seems to have right now? And I don't know. These are the sort of things that I think we regular folks outside of the system don't understand. We know that we have a public defender crisis right now. It is serious.
And
you can't really have good prosecutors unless you have people. There has to be somebody on both sides of this equation, to truly end up getting justice. Is there anything you can do to influence that at all? What role, if any, does the district attorney's office play in this?
Unfortunately, we have limited tools to address the problem, right?
Because
because crime doesn't stop. While we're going through this crisis, crimes are still happening, and we need to prosecute those crimes and get justice for those victims. We've done things. I've worked closely with the court where we have dockets where we try to resolve these cases. Mm-hmm. And we've had a few of those so far where we've resolved dozens of cases that were on the unrepresented list, and we're part of that backlog. And so those are the things we can do, but that really only chips away at the problem. And you're right, we do need good people on both sides.
Who's in charge of that, though, really, of really trying to push that forward?
This is a state-level problem.
It is.
So this is not something that can be solved in Jackson County by itself. There are things we can help do to help mitigate it, and we are doing those things.
What's an example of that, being done to mitigate it? Because my concern is that if you don't have the ability with the good public defenders that are available to do the job, don't cases get dismissed after a certain amount of time?
We haven't had that happen in Jackson County.
Not yet. Okay.
And so at least not yet. And the hope is that that won't happen. But like I mentioned, one of the things we've been trying to do is set up dockets where we try to resolve these cases. Whether it's we negotiate them a little farther down than we normally would, right? To try to resolve this, if people are willing to take accountability and just resolve their case and get it done. So,
yeah, what percentage of cases get plea bargained out in Jackson County in the criminal world, roughly speaking, if you were spitballing?
I don't think we're any different than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Certainly, I've only ever been a prosecutor here, but from what I see, we are on par with elsewhere. I think anywhere, 98, 99% of cases resolved through plea negotiations.
Really?
Yeah, and there
almost all of them.
Huh? Yeah, and there's good reason for that. I think both sides want to have certainty. When you go in front of a jury or even in front of a judge for sentencing, it's the unknown. You don't know what a jury is going to do. You don't know what a judge is going to do. And then on top of that, at least from a prosecutor's side and from what I have to advise victims, is that through a plea bargain, there's that finality. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be no appeal that can last. I had a case that I tried in February 2020, right before COVID, and the appeal, I convicted that individual. He went to prison. The appeal took 3 years. He was out of prison by the time the appeal came back. And luckily, it was affirmed. So we didn't have to retry him. But had we had to retry him, we would have had to retry him, and I wouldn't have had the ability to send him back to prison because he had served all of his time already.
Yeah.
So
already done. Okay. What to what level does Oregon play around with? And I'm bringing up stuff that I have read a lot of deeply on overcharging at the federal level, in which there seems to be an appearance of, we're going to throw so much at you. And it's not just the January 6th defendants or anything, but I've known people that have been going through the federal meat grinder, in which so much gets thrown at you that you essentially collapse and say, okay, well, I have to cut a plea. It's either that or my life is destroyed and my family is taken out. To what level do we do that in Jackson County, if at all? I don't know.
You know, our office has safeguards in place to prevent that. So there, we have a policy in place that you have to get approval either from the chief deputy or the elected DA to charge a case with more than 10 counts.
Oh,
so okay. That helps prevent that. You know, and I think we do a good job of being selective of what we charge. Certainly we sometimes charge in the alternative. And that is not to kind of stack.
What is charge in the alternative, Patrick?
That's not charging in the alternative is in effect we might charge a case in a way to give us multiple theories to rely on, multiple legal theories to rely on at trial. And that's not to stack charges on someone. That is to kind of hedge our bets at trial because maybe a jury doesn't see it that way. An individual juror doesn't see it that way under that particular theory, but under this other theory, they might agree and be willing to convict on that count instead. Okay. So it's kind of to hedge our bets.
Patrick, if you were elected as a district attorney, is there anything that you would change in the way that the current regime is being conducted? What would you do differently, if anything at all?
You know, I want to bring a fresh energy to the job. I think my youth gives me the advantage. I'm 34 years old. I have a long road to go here. And I want to be active in prosecution. I don't want to just handle the high-profile cases like Asante. I want to certainly keep doing that. But I also want to be active in lower-level prosecutions. And I think the benefit of that is it keeps my ear to the ground to be able to respond more quickly and understand the challenges in the community, what the community is experiencing. Mm-hmm. But also, I think it helps motivate the office and the prosecutors to have the same tenacity that they see from me and to kind of inspire them to work as much as I do.
What role or effect does lack of jail capacity have on prosecution? Does it ever weigh in?
It has a huge effect. You know, that is one of the biggest challenges in this county. Our crime rate is higher here because of our lack of jail capacity. I see time and time again the habitual offenders. And it's a small subset of our criminal population.
So it's like 10% do 90% of the problem.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
And we don't have the capacity to hold all those individuals. And so you have people that pick up, you know, 6, 12 or more cases in a short period of time. And
12 cases?
A lot of times those are property crimes where they're just terrorizing the community. They're terrorizing business owners. They're terrorizing families. We can't hold them. And that leads to them just continuing to go through the cycle. It leads to increased burden on law enforcement. It leads to increased burden on our office. So there's so many trickle-down effects. And a new jail where we had the capacity to hold those individuals would have so many trickle-down effects.
Yeah, I know that there's even animal shelter in Jackson County ends up being taken down. There's talk about getting some sort of a baby jail of sorts, for lack of a better term, put there. And we know that's it. There are big conversations about this. This has nothing to do with your job, but I'm just wondering how it actually affects you here. And before I let you do your elevator pitch for the final 30 seconds, could you help us understand? I was reading a lot about the release from the current district attorney about the issues with the judges, Judge Orr, Judge Benjamin Bloom. Judge Orr, of course, was disqualified or taken out of criminal trials because of some issues. What does that actually mean? Can you help regular lay people understand this?
Yeah, it was something unprecedented. At least, you know, Beth's been at our office for 35 years, and she nor the office had ever done that against a sitting judge.
I know.
And really, it just came down to multiple incidences over a few years where we just no longer felt like we could trust we could get a fair and impartial hearing in front of Judge Orr, that he would be fair to us, that he would follow the law.
Was there like a thumb on the scale? Is that kind of...
Yes. That's how we felt, and that was the motivation for affidavit-ing him off of state cases.
Now, the judge would likely come back and say, well, we don't have any evidence. I mean, what evidence was brought forth? Or was there ever any evidence brought forth?
There, attached to the press release, are multiple incidents, the multiple examples. Mm-hmm. In multiple cases. And so those are documented, and I just ask people to refer to those.
Okay.
Refer to that letter.
I'll post them just for the heck of it. Like I said, it's, you know, the media accounts of it, I don't think necessarily really understood it either. And so you can understand how we're looking at this. You're telling the judge that we're going to disqualify the judge to hear a case. And then we have another judge, I think it was Judge Bloom.
Yes.
That then appears to be, I guess the claim of the office would be saying, hey, you're playing some politics by vacating that judgment and then allowing Judge Orr, you know, back in, right?
Yeah, no. So first of all, what I'll say is that affidavit was filed against Judge Orr in 2021. He didn't challenge it.
Mm-hmm.
So in effect, he pled guilty to it or pled no contest.
All right.
And so really, that's done and over with. But it was, you know, I think the reason D.A. Hecker did the press release was it was really unfair to our office and to do it just because in a politically motivated way, just to help Judge Orr in his reelection.
Okay.
Yeah.
Election season, things get done. All right.
Yes.
All right. Somebody walks up to you and they're saying, okay, nice young man working all this stuff in the DA's office. What qualifies you best? Why do you want to be DA? And just give us your elevator pitch. And one.
Yeah, you know, I've been a prosecutor since 2016 and worked my way up in the office. I've handled everything from low-level child support enforcement cases up to homicides now. You know, robberies, serious assaults, drug cases. And so I have a, you know, well-rounded experience. And I'm also committed and dedicated to this job. And I think that's what we want from the district attorney. We want somebody who, like I said, you know, at the beginning of this interview, you want somebody that's going to be around in the long term and is going to stick in the job. You know, Klamath County is another example of a defense attorney who became DA and then decided they didn't want to do it anymore because it's not an easy job. And you don't want somebody to leave in the middle of their term, which can lead to turmoil. You know, Klamath County went a year and a half without a DA, and a lot of their prosecutors left after that. And so that is a disaster for a county to not have a prosecutor's office there to support them. And instead, DOJ from up in Salem had to come down and help run their office, which I don't think anyone wants. And so that's kind of the disaster that can happen. And that's why I'm the right person for the job.
All right. Patrick Green running for district attorney. Patrick Green, the number 4 DA.com. And you can find out more, read up on it. Patrick, good talking with you. Thank you very much. Good talking with you as well.
Okay. Thank you for having me on.
You bet. You're welcome. It's 8 o'clock. This is KMED. KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford. KCMD Grants Pass. Translator K294 AS Ashland.